Welcome to Disruptive Adventism. My name is Jose Briones, and I'll be your host for this podcast. This podcast is about discussing the polemical statements and practices that are part of the Adventist fabric, which in turn shape this belief system to be unique and relevant for today's society.
It is time for another episode of Disruptive Adventism, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we're going to continue our series on youth culture, and we're going to be talking about with the editor of Humans of Adventism, Caleb Isley. So we have him here, and we're really excited to talk with him. So let's welcome him and let's see what happens. So how's it going, Caleb?
Hey, great. How are you?
Doing well, man. Doing well. It's been a long day, but I'm making it through.
So. I get that.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what are you doing right now, and what's Humans of Adventism?
Okay. My name is Caleb Isley. I'm the editor of a storytelling platform, mostly on social media, Facebook and Instagram, called Humans of Adventism. If you've ever found Humans of New York online, it's one of many, many pages that branched off of that. Humans of Seattle, Humans of all these different things. But instead, we applied it to a religion instead of a physical location. So what I do, two times a week, we post a different perspective and story from a Seventh-day Adventist. And what am I doing currently? I'm sitting at a desk in my office, enjoying my time with you.
Cool. That's awesome. That's awesome, man. Now, when it comes to some of the work that you've been doing for the past 2 years now, how long has it been? 2 years?
We're a little under, we're about a year and a half right now.
Okay.
Yep.
So for a year and a half, you've been reaching out to people, doing interviews, connecting with them through social media. And well, that's a big part of what, you know, what the youth culture of today is.
Sure.
You know, interacting with social media, or, you know, it's not about the mail or, you know, going into maybe a, maybe you can go to a coffee shop, but a lot of the interactions that happen among youth are on social media.
Sure.
How do you come around to decide to impact this space? And what are some of the things that you have seen or the interactions that you have had with people?
So this social space, from what I can see, your coffee shop meetup, your kind of traditional like in-person hangout things socially, that used to be like where you started. You know, you met someone face to face and you talked and then you went somewhere. I would say now a lot of things are initiated online first. Even just you and me, we met and talked online first before ever seeing each other in person, right? And this isn't weird for our culture or our age group. This is very common. A lot of the people that I talk to and consider close friends, I communicate with almost exclusively online, maybe on the phone, but mostly, you know, through social media and text, you know, almost every day of the week. And so really socializing is changing, and social media especially is becoming more than just like a hobby or something that you do with your free time. It's actually becoming like a physical space. It's not physical, but it is a place where people's minds are. So even if I'm in Orangeburg, South Carolina. I am nowhere near a bunch of young Adventists, right? There, no college nearby, no high school, Adventist high school within even an hour of me. And yet I am doing things and interacting with other Adventists almost all day, every day. I mean, constantly. And I think why I really have fell into and pursued telling stories this way and interacting with people in this way is because this is where my peers are. I'm more impactful to reach them this way than I would walking into their college campus.
When I hear you say that, as you're mentioning that this is a different kind of space, it's physical to a certain degree, but it's not at the same time. It's virtual. I mean, in reality, when we're talking about the place or the locus of the place in and of itself, But you're saying that you're reaching more people through this space than you would in a college campus.
Absolutely.
How have your interactions changed then in the real world?
Sure. It has absolutely impacted me. I think for some of us, especially with what I do, people trust me more online than they would in person. And that's going to sound unnatural. But if you imagine me going to a college campus and just standing in the middle of a populated area, saying what I post on Facebook, just saying it out loud, I don't have people's trust and attention, really, right? But when you have the opportunity and the option of, you can go and check and see what this person is kind of like, they can go through my pictures, my past posts, you know, quickly they can get a feel for who I am, and kind of have that story told to them. They trust me through their own investigation a lot of times. You know, they'll go see if I'm a trustworthy person. I align with their views to a certain extent. And then, you know, I am able to talk with them about deep personal issues sometimes for a story. And through this, I've been taught a lot about humanity. I've learned, you know, I've interviewed over 150 people now. And I have learned so quickly how little I know about other human beings. Because every time I think I know about someone, they tell me their story and it's something I would never dream that they dealt with, or it's not something that I would think they would think. And so how this interacts with me and how it affects my interactions with people in person, going into interactions in person thinking you know about someone is a quick way to get them to not trust you, if that makes sense. You going in with an assumption about them, going in, telling them how they are, acting like you know more than you do, it makes people in person close up. So what I've learned is assume as little as possible and be interested, be curious. And so in person, now, even if it's a 5-year-old kid or a 90-year-old grandma or my peers or whatever, I've tried to kind of just drop the assumptions and approach them with an attitude of learning, because it's been proven to me that I don't know this person's life or their perspective.
Something that I hear when you're saying that is mainly that your interactions online or your interviews that you have done with people,
yeah,
have allowed you to understand people in the real world better.
Yes.
And maybe, you know, my question would be, who are you interacting with on a regular basis? What's your, you know, kind of like circle looking like? Because, I mean, you are, like you said, not in an Adventist town per se.
Yeah.
You are doing and telling Adventist stories. Mm-hmm. But you're interacting on a regular basis, probably not with a lot of Adventist people.
Right. So here's who I see in person. And I've never really gotten to talk about this before. But in my life, I work in low-income neighborhoods in South Carolina. Okay, so this is one of the poorest states in the United States. And within one of the poorest states, the poorest neighborhoods. And for my job, I go into people's homes every day and work. So I'm working with majority Black and poor people in South Carolina. You know, neighborhoods where a lot of people don't have transportation, things like that. So at least Monday through Friday, I'm interacting with the poorest people in my state. And then on Sabbath, I'm going and I'm interacting with a small group of mostly elderly Seventh-day Adventists. So it's completely different from the people I interact with online. If you look at Humans of Adventism, it trends toward my own age group, mm-hmm. right? It's mostly millennial, some Gen Z, some baby boomers and Gen X. But for the most part, it looks very different than who I interact with in person.
The reason why I ask that is because, well, you know, part of the culture and part of the youth culture that this country has developed, or maybe even our church has developed, is that we kind of gravitate towards cliques.
Sure.
You know, our own kind of peer, our own kind of people. And it's normal, it's natural. I mean, it's not something evil per se. It's just like, well, you know, people my age think like I think most of the time, or they understand the same things that I understand. But I think something that is important to recognize is that everyone shapes our culture.
Yes.
And the interactions that we have on a regular basis definitely help us to be better people, or, you know, better individuals as a whole. So I think that's why I'm interested to see, and as you say, like, so when you're interacting with these individuals, how does your lens of Humans of Adventism, have you ever thought of, I don't know if maybe you have come into interaction with Adventist humans that are in those low-income neighborhoods?
Right.
Or maybe, I don't know, that you have evangelized, touched, talked to.
Yeah.
You know,
First of all, I have run into people that surprised me, that were church members, that were living in poverty, that I didn't know. When somebody's at church, you do not know. You can kind of judge by maybe the car they drive or what they're wearing, but you don't know who's living in poverty unless, you know, especially if they don't want you to. And even people who look clean and dressed up, that may be their only, you know, set of formal clean clothes that they set aside specifically for showing up Sabbath, but that may not be anything like what their life looks like. So I've had that experience for sure. But like you're talking about cliques, my life hasn't afforded me that opportunity. Because I didn't go to Adventist college, I didn't go off with my friends, you know, I went to public college. Automatically, being Adventist sets me in a little bit of a different culture than anyone I'm going to meet. You know, when we had tests that showed up on Saturdays, you know, I am the only person, and unless I shared with a Jewish classmate or something, that is going to have a religious issue with this being on Saturday. Thankfully, I was in an environment where I was viewed very positively. I was respected. And despite no one else sharing those beliefs, they went out of their way to accommodate my faith, because I was a person that was pouring into the people around me, whether they believed like I did or not, whether they had religious convictions or not. And when I left that place, you can still go and find students and talk to them. And if you mention Adventism, they have a very high view because of that safety and trust that we built.
That's crazy to me when you say, like, they think of it as safe.
Yeah.
And not necessarily. I mean, our church is great. I mean, I'm in love with it. But at the same time, I think that sometimes even within Adventism, we kind of have a higher criticism. You know, we like to critique our church, and sometimes, I guess it depends on the environment in which you are. It can come across as that's the only thing that we say. So, you know, for me to hear that Adventists are regarded in a positive way outside of, you know, outside of our church to a certain degree, it makes me feel happy, you know. Yeah. It makes me feel hope, you know, that there's something out there.
I have this theory that there's actually a church within the church. And what I mean by that is, with your podcast and with other millennial media, and not just millennial, but people who are trying to open our hearts to other people who are not Adventist, we are connected and working and pushing for a certain mission within Adventism, right? A Christ-like attitude that actually loves the people around us and values their life. And for people that are viewing what we're doing now, even our listeners right now, even, you know, anyone who looks at Humans of Adventism or That Christian Blogger, whatever it is, they're encountering church in a very different way than if they had shown up at their local church. You know, especially if you're in like rural you know, wherever. I'm in South Carolina, but when I was in Indiana, it was the same way. If I walked into a small isolated church, most of the time, the feeling that I got was not safety. It was not welcome. It was sort of like, we're going to tolerate you, but we'd like you a lot more if you adapted to our culture here. And yeah, it's a different thing, but I think that within the Adventist Church, there's definitely a push toward safety, a push toward genuine interest in other human beings. And I think that's one of the driving forces behind my own platform too.
Talking about that kind of safety that you're maybe trying to foster in the Adventist Church, trying to change, you know, create a new space to a certain degree. What are some of the projects that Humans of Adventism has? Like, you know, because I believe that in the space of digital media, you know, this is you're doing storytelling, you're helping people understand Adventism from very different perspectives. And that at the end of the day, the people that are in Adventism are humans, you know,
right.
And they're fallible and they have good qualities as well. You know, they're all encompassing, they're embedded in their context. But what are some of the ideas, or I mean, how have you seen this church that you were speaking about impact your culture as a young adult, or maybe the culture of others? How do you see that changing the space of how we perceive maybe religion, church, or even within our own movement as a Seventh-day Adventist?
I see a couple of things happening. Number one, I see people who, if they had to rely on their local church alone, would not be Adventist anymore, coming back or getting re-energized. I see a lot of people who are very disappointed with their options as far as where they live and their church experience in the traditional setting, that are actually dedicating themselves to the Adventist movement. So while they don't like going to church, they are connected in a different way and willing to take action in a different way because they are seeing their peers doing so. The other thing that I see is I really believe that we are interacting with people who aren't Adventist at a much higher level, because the attitude is not come into our church and then we'll do something. It's we'll come to you, if that makes sense. We are taking our abilities and our thoughts and our skills and whatever God has given us, and we're bringing it to people. And we're doing it in a way where they can see what we're doing from a safe distance without having to immediately commit to anything, without being pressured. We're just there. We're doing it, and it's a service, and you're welcome to partake in it. The problem with church, and one thing I have a really hard time with my peers, I have people who are genuinely interested in our beliefs, but they don't want to come into a church building because of the pressure that they feel or the judgment that they feel from whoever's going to be there. So they don't want to be pressured to come back if they don't want to. They don't want to, you know, talk about what they believe right off. They just want to see what's going on. But a lot of times when they get there, they get mobbed by people who want a commitment. They want to make sure, you know, you better come back, you know, or they just get, you know, the judgmental glares if their tattoos show or you know, their jewelry's too flashy or, you know, whatever. It's not, a lot of times it's not an environment that is, I am pursuing you and a relationship with you. It's more like, become like me.
I have to maybe push back a little bit when it comes to this, just for the sake of kind of like clarification.
Sure.
That I want you to kind of maybe interact a little bit more. And that's this idea that, you know, there is a certain, not mold, but there's a certain characteristics, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, for example, when we think of immoral behaviors, mm-hmm. per se, and I'm not talking about, you know, jewelry or immodesty or those things that are, in my opinion, a little bit petty and that we get into fights about.
Right.
that may be, you know, just preferences rather than, you know, clear biblical principles,
right,
or, you know, doctrines per se. But when it comes to religion, right, and when it comes to our church in particular, don't you think that there is a sense of, and I'm going to use this loaded word right now that we're going through our context, but this idea of unity, right, this idea of harmony, even though we may have different practices,
sure,
there are certain characteristics that may need to look the same. And my question is, in regards to this, do you think that as young adults, mm-hmm, as part of the youth culture that pushes back against this mold, against this kind of like cookie cutter, like, you know, we sometimes speak about this, don't you think that this idea is just part of, you know, just being young and not understanding that there are necessary means or necessary areas in which we need to all look relatively the same or within a certain spectrum?
I think I do believe that we need some commonality. But for me, that commonality needs to be a Christ-like character. So for me, all of these rules that, you know, let's take health for instance, right? As Adventists, we don't eat pork. That's a principle that we have, okay? But what's crazy is that if you see someone at Cracker Barrel eating bacon, an Adventist will be offended. And yet, if you do something, you know, eat something else very unhealthy for you, they may not be offended. You can have a giant thing of Sprite and drink it, but since it doesn't have caffeine and it's not pork, it can be worse for you than bacon. But if it's not on our list of rules, then it's okay. But understanding the principle behind it says we're doing all of this because we want to be healthy and because we believe that health affects, you know, your physical health affects your spiritual health, right? So what I want our commonality to be is a Christ-like character. And every rule that we examine has to come back to that, has to come back to this principle that God is love. So even if you talk about promiscuity, right? If you talk about sex outside of marriage or multiple partners and things, when you trace this back, the principle behind this isn't an abstract rule. It's that we are built in a way that we are damaged if sex is not coupled with a long-term loving relationship, right? There's an effect on us. So my problem is with how we handle these subjects. It's not necessarily with the subjects themselves. I believe largely what we teach in Adventism, but I think that the way we go about just about everything is not, it's not coming from a place of God is love, and because God is love, he, you know, wants what's best for us. We say that, we use that terminology, but how we act is that's against the rules, right? That you broke a rule, that kind of thing. And it's just not how I look at it. So ultimately, yes, there would be similarities between us because we're trying to treat each other as best we can and even trying to treat ourselves as best we can. But as far as all of the cultural preferences and signifiers and things like that, no, I don't think those are necessary to look the same at all.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. I mean, I just wanted to kind of, for you to engage and for us to engage maybe a little bit more, because as you say, you know, there are certain things that will be cultural. There are certain things that will be done in the West Coast, not in the East Coast. And then we can go from country to country, which is even more vast amount of differences.
Mm-hmm.
But I also agree that with you in that point, that when it comes from a Christ-like point of view, well, Christ also had attainable goals or attainable virtues per se, you know, and we can see those reflected not only in the Gospels, but also in the New Testament.
Yeah.
And I think that as you're kind of engaging with that, and I'm engaging and I'm thinking about it, you know, our churches maybe need to have a variance in language, because I think that that's where it comes from at the end of the day. You know, the language that we use to talk about those people that we're not agreeing with, or the language that we're used to, quote unquote, condemn and judge.
Yes.
You know, the people that come to our doors and to our churches is damaging to our image as Seventh-day Adventists.
Well, just look at just about anyone Jesus met with that everybody didn't want him to meet with, right? God gave us the Ten Commandments, and he put in there, you know, a commandment about adultery, right? And yet, though he was the one who gave us the command about adultery, he is also the person defending the woman caught in adultery from being killed, right? Because the law was not the point. The principle was the point, and it gave power to the law. So in this situation, God, in his love, decided that this is a better way to handle this situation for this person's life. Even though there was a rule there, the people didn't understand that that rule came from something, right? It wasn't abstract. It wasn't just there with no reason. And really, if you look at anyone, I mean, the reason that the Jews hated the Romans, the reason that the Jews hated the tax collectors, there are principles or there are rules that they're operating from to feel this way. But they're making those rules their God over God himself. And I think that's kind of a struggle that I'm having with all of this is when it comes to youth culture, we need curious people. Because if you just go in with your big list of rules and start judging young people, they'll be cast out quick. I mean, we're all failing these rules that tradition has held for a long, long time in a different way. And sometimes I think for the majority of us, we're failing so many of the traditions that Adventists have kept for so long that we feel alienated to even being part of at least corporate Adventism.
I like how you put it, and mainly because it kind of speaks to the idea of, and I think this is part of our culture today, that we're looking for restoration, you know, looking to restore people instead of just punish them for the things that they don't know or the things that they don't agree with us or the things that they are not in line per se, or they're not uniform with us, or they're not looking like us in this spectrum that we may understand. Yeah, well, those are good thoughts. Those are very, very good thoughts, I think. Well, as we start kind of closing out, you know, we'll be having a good discussion, and I really like your points of view. I would like to talk about what are some of the things that you have seen through the Humans of Adventism interviews, pages. How are you guys encouraging other people to engage in their local spaces, you know, and their ideas, and maybe talking with other people, talking with what we will call as Christians, right? Secular people, or people that are not related to religiosity, people that are atheist or so. How are you encouraging that? And how are you interacting with those people as well, maybe in your context?
I think I actually spend a lot of time getting feedback from people who aren't Christian or Adventist, because I care about the ways that we are connecting. Even if they're not going to be led to the same beliefs that we have, I care about the relationships that we have. And one of the main complaints that I think I've heard the most is that Christians either deny physical reality, or they just don't understand or want to understand it. And so when you see Christian media, it's this sanitized type of stuff. It's filled with God language. It's filled with generic things based on good things, but not things that most people, unless you're Christian, can really connect with. And so I think one beautiful thing about Humans of Adventism, because it's very transparent. It's hardly censored. You know, there is a line that we have, but it's much further out than I think most Christian media has. And we can connect over this because there's the Adventist part that is for Adventists, yes, but there's the human part that we're all experiencing life and living and figuring things out together. And so when you have an Adventist that is experiencing depression, and you have an agnostic person that is experiencing depression, suddenly reading through someone else's experience, despite the fact that they may believe differently than you, their story resonates with you because you've been there or you are there, right? There's far more in common between an Adventist human person and a secular human person than we really like to think. That we have to wake up in the morning, you know, we have to go to work or do whatever we do during the day. We have stress and trauma and a history and goals and hopes. And no matter what your belief system is, we're sort of trying to figure out how everybody else is doing life. You know, how do they interact with this? Like there's no set of rules and guidelines for life that just has it all figured out for us. We're all figuring it out. And I think there's a lot there, even if you're not Adventist, to just hear the story of another person and how they're navigating life. And then on top of that, how their faith informs their decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like how you put it. And definitely, I think that, as you say, we need to admit that first and foremost, you know, we're humans. We're Adventist humans in this case, but we're humans nonetheless. We go through similar experiences. We see the same things happening in the media, happening. We have similar, maybe, feelings towards it and towards the reality in which we live. So yeah, I definitely see that. I guess last question, and before we get you to the final word, would be, what are some of the plans that Humans of Adventism has for the future? You know, what are some of the big things coming up, and where can people find you as well?
I will say that because I'm not always the sole person to be able to make the decision of what to share and what not to. There are some things we can't cover.
Okay. Sounds good.
But, I will say that, this time right now, the next couple of months is a very, very busy time as far as cross-platform interaction, as far as getting more people involved. As we're moving into 2019, we have an established audience. You know, we have built a community now. And now the question is, you know, how far can we expand this? It's not just about getting more followers and everything, but reaching people in different ways. So not everybody's on Facebook, right? Not everybody reads stories like this. Some people will only be reached through film. Some people will only be reached through podcasting. There are people who listen to podcasts that don't use social media that much. And further, we got a taste of print with our collaboration with 71.5. But ultimate goal, I've made this pretty clear, for print has always been a full-sized coffee table book with, you know, I would love to see 100 or more stories in it. And the reason that I care about this specific one so much is that Adventist culture, not just culture, but our demographic, very much of Adventism is older people, right? And they're not being exposed to all of this great information the same as we who are interacting online are. So there's a lot of people out there who, for them, Adventism, it's changed and you hear different things, but it's still about just going into church each week, fulfilling your role that you've done. And they don't really always know all of these great things that are coming out of the denomination. And I think I feel that acutely because I've traveled around, I've spoke, I've been able to reach and grow a community of 4,000 people. And my church barely knows, they've barely heard of Humans of Adventism, right? To them, I'm a church member. I teach Sabbath school. I preach sometimes. I'm very involved. I'm a great young man, you know, in the church. But they don't realize how much their influence on me is carrying out across the nation. You know, by influencing me, by inspiring me and teaching me about God, they are then enabling me to do the same for all of the people that I touch online. And I'd love to be able to bring something to them that was in a format that they understood.
That's awesome. That sounds like a really great plan. And I really like that you're kind of branching out not from the digital space to the quote unquote real world, to the physical world, because that really says, you know, you're trying to reach all people. It's not just like the people that are in the digital space, but everyone that wants to hear the message, whoever has an ear or eyes in this case to read, you know. So I really like that. Well, Caleb, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I appreciate our time today. I really, really appreciate that you took the time to do this interview and, you know, talk about a little bit of the culture, youth culture, and the humans of Adventism culture as a whole. Well, you know, as we always do, we like to give the final word to our guests. So give us the final word on Humans of Adventism and youth culture.
Yeah, I want to encourage, especially if you are on the fence about, you know, should I do something? You know, can I do something? Can I create, you know, especially media stuff? Yes. The answer is yes. And I think what I want to leave people with is this idea that you do not need permission, right? Please, like, be in the Word and study your Bible and know your own heart and all of that. But don't wait around for people to tell you it's okay to do something now. You know, go ahead and live your faith out loud. Go ahead and do something unique. And if you don't have an audience and you don't have people to connect with, find other platforms that are doing this. We all help each other, and we all help new ministries as well. And, you know, if it has to be us, shoot us a message. You know, find us, Humans of Adventism on Facebook, Humans of Adventism on Instagram, or AdventistHumans.com, and we'll be here.
Thank you for listening today to our interview with Caleb Isley on the topic of youth culture, digital and real life interactions. We really hope that you enjoyed it. If you want to check more of Caleb's content on Humans of Adventism, please make sure to pay them a visit at AdventistHumans.com or on their Facebook or Instagram pages at Humans of Adventism. We really appreciate your time with us today. If you like the podcast, please make sure to share it with others. If you found anything that was helpful to you or that can be helpful to others, please pass it on or give us feedback. Send us your feedback on our Facebook page, Instagram page, or on our email at disruptiveadventism@gmail.com. We really appreciate your support. If you want to continue to support us, please make sure to rate us on iTunes or your favorite podcatching app. It really helps us to get new audiences and to get new people listening to the podcast. If you want to collaborate financially, you know where to find us, patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. You really help us out to keep the lights on in here. Mics, upgrades, our team members that are hardworking, trying to get more interviews for the future, and just, you know, just a general appreciation that you can have with us for putting out the content and for bringing conversations into the space of life. Thank you for listening again. We really appreciate your time. Our next interview is going to be our last interview of the year. We interviewed Laís Méndez. She is a Gen Zer, and she will share with us some of the things that are going through her life and what is Gen Z culture happening. So make sure to tune in for that podcast, our last podcast of the year, this coming Friday. Thanks again for listening. We really appreciate your time. We really hope that you join us for our next podcast and our next future series for next year. It's almost over, guys, and we're really excited for next year and what is to come. So thank you again. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.